welcome back to Not a Single Bother podcast with me, Aislinn Dowling. I hope everyone is well. Yes, I do have a new introduction music. Thank you for noticing. I said I would change it up because I was kind of sick of the other one. It was a bit boring and I wanted something more upbeat. Came across this one and this is what I'm going with. Let me know what you think. I took a little break there, didn't really mean to. I was just flat out, friends staying with me, moving back from Perth, moving over from Ireland. Everyone's been staying with me there for the last, 6 weeks, probably more than that. 8 weeks now, I'd say. And just crazy with work, there's just been so much going on. So I didn't really have time, lads, to be honest, all right? Didn't have time. But I'm back at it now, and hopefully we'll keep the momentum going. There's a lot of crazy, crazy stuff going on in the world at the minute between war in Ukraine, war in the rest of the world, floods, lads. The floods over here are mental. It's been non-stop raining here, non-stop for the last 2 weeks. So yeah, it's been a bit crazy, but here we are for a distraction. This is not why you listen to my podcast, to be chatting about the same shit that you see in the news. So this week, anyways, I was talking with Aislinn Fox, who is from AOK Nutrition. And I've actually been hanging to get her on for ages when I first heard about her and came across her page. Like, she's so full of knowledge, but like explains it so well, like so non-scientific and too much kind of, like, it can be so hard to absorb all this information to do with women's health, hormones, contraception, periods, menopause, fertility. It can be so overwhelming, but she just explains it so easy, and that's just what I love about her. And so yeah, she was so informative and I got all your questions answered. I mean, some were quite specific, but I still wanted to make sure that everything was answered. And I feel like I just have so much better knowledge now and gotten rid of all these like stupid myths, because it's gas. Like, do you know the way you'd be talking to your friends and you're like, oh yeah, I'm on this, or I was on the bar there and it was making me, you know, gain weight, or yeah, I took this to regulate my period, or different things like that. And everyone has different opinions. They're like, oh yeah, that's weird now, because it was like this for me. And nobody has the right information. Like, everyone just has all these random facts and nobody knows what's correct. So that's why Aislinn is just amazing at clearing all that up. And even on her own, like, you can make private appointments with her, obviously, for specific things. Like, everyone is individual and everything is specific to you. But on her Instagram, she just provides so much information, like, and free information, like, which is amazing. And she has highlights saved on all these different types of things. You can look at her highlight on contraception, coming off the pill, and yeah, loads of other things. But you can just have a look on her Instagram. It's AOK Nutrition. Oh, also, lads, Rosanna Purcell shares the name of my podcast on her Instagram stories. And I was buzzing, like, I was plaguing my friends. I was like, put Not a Single Bother in the question box, because she put up a question box asking for podcast recommendations, whatever, sharing her top ones for the month. And last night then she shared it and everyone was sending it to me, and oh my god, I was buzzing, because I've set a few goals for this year, and she is up there with like the top, or one of the top guests anyways, that I really want to get in the podcast this year. So fingers crossed, this is the start of it. And now she knows the name of the podcast, so I would absolutely love to get her on, and I'm sure all of you would love to hear her as well. So yeah, buzzing about that. And thank you so much if you put my name, or if you put Not a Single Bother in the suggestion box. I love you. Thank you so much, guys. Anyways, I'm chatting shite as usual. I'm going to go straight into it. And as always, please rate and review the podcast. You can now rate it on Spotify as well. So just give me an all 5 stars there if you don't mind. And then you can leave your review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so, so much. And if you've already done that before, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. And I see them all. And yeah, so I'll just go straight into it. And I hope you enjoy the episode. And follow Aislinn on AOK Nutrition for more information like this. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Aislinn. Thank you so, so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I always love coming on and having the chats
Yeah,
on
it is.
podcasts. So thank you for
Yeah.
having me.
No worries at all. First of all, just kind of introduce yourself because some people may not know who you are or what you do. So, what is it that you do and how did you get into it? What's your background?
Yeah, so I guess I'm AOK Nutrition. That's probably my alias online. My name is Aisling Fox now. I used to be Aisling O'Kelly. I just got married a couple of months ago, finally.
Congratulations, by the
And
way. Congrats.
my thank you. My background is, so I'm a nutritional therapist. I'm big into like natural medicine. In my clinic, we look at the root of the problem, and from that, then we try and help people's symptoms, help people's issues, and we use things like supplements. We use stress management tips. We're big into herb medicine. I'm actually training at the moment to be a herb medicine practitioner. So nearly finished. That's now in August. So I'm basically a
Amazing.
full-time student, full-time self-employed at the moment. It's a
Oh
bit
my
stressful, but
God.
the main thing in our clinic, it's natural medicine, and it's always, like I said, they're looking at the root of problems, trying to figure out what's gone wrong instead of just trying to put like a plaster in a bleeding wound is the best kind of analogy I can give.
First of all, I just want to touch on contraception because I feel like when I posted on my stories, that's kind of what people had the most questions about. And I'll just go straight into it, I suppose. And because there's so many different options in regards to contraception, I feel like it can be very overwhelming to choose like the right one with the least amount of side effects. But can we just run through like the different options that you would recommend and the ones that we should steer clear of, in your opinion?
It's not even so much steer clearing of. I think the most important thing when you're looking at contraceptives is understanding how they work. And I
Right.
think I know back in the day, like, when I went got the pill years ago, they didn't sit me down explaining how the pill works. And a lot of people even listening don't realize, but like when you take something like the combined pill, the mini pill, it works by switching off your hormones. So you don't ovulate. Because when you ovulate, that's when the egg gets released. That's what obviously the risk is of getting pregnant. But ovulation isn't just about that egg getting released. It is, like I said, there how your body makes your hormones, and your hormones are responsible for everything from like your energy, your mood, your sex drive. Like many young girls come to me and they think they have no sex drive, and I'm like, no, you're on the pill. You just switch it off. So I'm sure we'll talk about that today, but it shapes everything. So I think that's important when you're making a decision on what contraceptives, because a lot of hormonal contraceptives, that's how they work. They switch off your hormones. Then you have non-hormonal methods, which are things like, for example, like the copper coil is quite popular at the moment, and it's literally, like I said, like literally a copper rod in your cervix, and your body's just basically freaked. It's like, okay, we're not gonna get pregnant, like, and it impairs how sperm moves in the body. So even if magically sperm did get very far, it can't swim basically properly. So that's a better option because, well, for certain people, this thing, it's there's no one size fits all, because the copper coil, does come with its own side effects. People are reporting things like copper toxicity, which is where, like, I've never seen it, but it is reported. You can increase, it can cause heavier periods, which again is linked to a hormonal imbalance that I always see with clients, and we can fix that a lot through diet. Bacterial vaginosis is more common. If you're vegan or you're plant-based, the copper coil generally isn't a great idea, because copper, I know I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, so I'll do this for the purpose of the podcast, but
It's fine.
copper and zinc compete for absorption, right? So if you're in a copper coil and like non-negotiable, you have to take zinc so you're not deficient, and zinc is really important for preventing those heavy periods. But if you are plant-based and you don't have that much iron in your diet, by having too much zinc, you can actually knock off your iron even further. So it's such a minefield, it really is, when we're looking at contraceptives. The other one that I would talk about a lot of times as well is natural cycles, which is basically like you take your body temperature. So our body temperature changes before we ovulate. So depending on what our body temperature is, we know where we are in our cycle, which again, I'm like, why are we not taught this in school?
No, honestly, I feel like I
Yeah.
was saying this to the girls when I was talking about like having you on, that there's so much that we don't know, and it's so important in our lives that there should be a subject in school that we get examined on as well. Like, you know, that you actually have to
Yeah.
do a test on so that you're actually taking it in, not just, you know, having,
Yeah.
you know, the way you'd have like a
Yeah.
health class where you don't pay attention. But like, these
Yeah.
are the things that we need to know in life,
Yeah.
like, and
Or like I think, sorry, we think back to like, biology and like third year. Like we did this in biology. You learned about your menstrual cycle in biology, but it's under like reproductive systems, and
Yeah,
it's
it's
talking about
tiny.
like the follicular tube, and it's just so far removed from what actually happens. Like I've like my clients, but the when your boobs are sore, blah blah, and they're like, yeah, oh my god. I'm like, well, it's because of this, this, and this. And people are like, oh my god, yeah, that makes so much sense, instead of making it real scientific, because people's brains don't work the same way,
Of
like,
course.
so That's one thing. So going back to contraceptives, it's all about understanding how it works and then deciding for you whether that's the best option. So if you're someone who you feel like you're very, very anxious already and suffered a little bit low mood and things like that, like going on something like the combined pill that switches off your hormones, like that's a lot of people, they feel more anxious on it. And it is because you're lacking those hormones. Like in the second half of our cycle, we have a hormone called progesterone. That's a real calming hormone. It's really important for your mood. You don't make that if you're on the pill. So it's important, I think, just to understand how it works is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And I actually have, I actually have a highlight on my Instagram called Birth Control. And I go through like every single method and like the pros and cons. It's completely neutral. Amazing. Like it's just me explaining. So if anyone's more information, definitely go watch that.
Okay, unreal. Because the pill seems to be like the most common one that people use, especially when you're starting off, like if you're, when you're in your younger teens or whatever, it seems to be the most common one. But it's obviously, so it's changing your hormones and it's stopping your period. But is that bad for you long term, like stopping your period and all that?
I think there's two different ways to think about it. Okay. So there's a big difference between Barbara, who's 17, just out having sex, periods are grand, doesn't want to get pregnant and goes on the pill, that's mm-hmm. it, right? And Barbara, who's 17 and goes into the doctor and she hasn't had a period in a year, and they put her on the pill, and I'm doing inverted commas here for anyone listening, to regulate your period. So the most important things people can take away from today is the bleed that you get in your period is not, or sorry, the bleed that you get in the pill is not a real period. It's a pill bleed. It's a side effect of stopping your birth control, and that bleed is just the uterine lining shedding. It's not your own hormones being made. It's completely different to your own cycle. And that's what people don't realize. People come to me and they go, oh, my cycles used to be irregular, and then the pill fixed it. And I'm like, no, your cycles used to be regular, and then you switch off your hormones. You've never addressed it. So in that sense, like I see clients come to me and they're coming off to be under 30 and now they're having trouble getting pregnant because they never addressed the issue in the first place.
Yeah.
Whereas people who just go on the pill as a contraceptive are generally fine when they come off it. Like there's no research to say being on the pill affects your fertility long term. Okay. Like if you're on the pill for 10 years, but I think it does affect it if you're at the root of the problem was never addressed. If you have PCOS and went to the pill, you're still going to have that, chances are, when you come off it. Do you know that kind of way? So that's the difference in how it affects your fertility and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But I've heard you say that as well before about the that in your 7-day gap, like that people think that that's their period, but it's not. And I found that so interesting because I feel like nobody knows that. Like I think until I heard you say that before, when I was on the pill, I would have thought, yeah, that's my period. I don't know why people don't know that, but it's a very interesting fact.
And we're just not taught it, and to explain it as well, because like people are like, where does the blood come from?
Yeah.
So our own hormone, we have a hormone called estrogen, okay? And estrogen kicks in that first half of your cycle, and it makes your period grow. That's what estrogen does. Now, estrogen is switched off when you're on the pill. So estrogen's other job is, I always say, like, it makes you happy and horny. So, you know, your libido, your sex drive, even working out in the gym, like when you're coming up to ovulation, that estrogen phase, you're even stronger, like you're fitter, your cardiovascular function, like you're literally like a little superwoman, superhero. But when you're on the pill, there is a synthetic estrogen in the pill, and that synthetic estrogen also makes your uterine lining thicken. So it's not, but that estrogen doesn't make you happy and horny. Like it just literally makes that uterine, like I'm going to period grow again, Virgil Thomas saying that.
Right.
So that's where the blood comes from. That's why it's so confusing. But yeah, it's not. Your own hormones are null and void, completely switched off, like flatlined. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And what are some other myths that are associated with certain types of contraceptives that you feel people need to be corrected on? Like that one there.
Yeah, I suppose the biggest thing is that fixes your issues. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if regulates your cycle, it fixes your acne, this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
that terrifies me. It really does. Like, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, I used to have bad skin, the pill fix it. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, literally my stomach, like, knots up when I hear this. Because a lot of girls, and it's unbelievable. I think sometimes when I talk about things, it sounds like I'm against the pill. I'm like, oh, my God, isn't it amazing that we have it? Like, you know, if you're 18, 19 with hormonal acne, I'm like, go on the pill if that helps you get through your week. Like, you know, but just understand that it's probably not going to be a cure for it. Like, it's just, it's like taking, I don't know, it's just like, I've no analogy now, but just, it's you're not addressing the root of the issue. It's just like putting like a plaster. I'm like, okay, I'll do that later on. Do you know the best analogy is actually when you're cleaning your bedroom, you throw everything into the wardrobes. And you're like, yeah. My bedroom is so tiny, but your wardrobes are absolutely in this, right? This analogy.
Yeah.
That is kind of like what it feels like if you're you know, been on it maybe for acne or something like that. It's like as if you're like, okay, I'll deal with that later. And you just, everything looks great, but you're like, I need to actually really clean out those wardrobes. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. That's so funny. That's so true though. Like people... that's why I found, like, when I listened to you before, I was like, oh my god, it's mad, like people are going around just with all these mindsets on these things, like that, like that your, that the pill regulates your period and that it gets rid of your spots and everything, when that's, it's not the case, but like that's what everybody thinks, so it's mad. Yeah. so that's the main thing, so that it fixes your issues, it doesn't fix issues, like that's the
for
type
most
of
people, a lot of people, yeah you will have to kind of, yeah,
right. Is it possible to steer clear of contraception completely, monitor your cycle, and steer clear of like having sex during your fertile period? Like, would you recommend that as a way of, as a method of contraception, we'll say, or is it too difficult to do that?
No, it's very easy to do it once you know how to do it.
Yeah.
And again, it depends on your circumstance. Like, I think there's a big difference between young girl, like in her early 20s in college, like having a ball, like maybe, you know, having fun, maybe different partners and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, a few nights out a week. And then like someone like me who's been in a relationship for literally like 15 years, like married, like, do you know that kind of, like, they're very two different things. So again, it's all about what works for you.
Of course.
100%. Again, this is something that we should, like you were saying at the start, like been taught in school.
Yeah.
There's only 6 days of your entire cycle you can get pregnant. 6 days.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so hard to get pregnant.
It's
like,
not that,
that way.
But I feel like it's drilled into you from when you're younger that, like, you know, don't get pregnant. And everyone's like, okay, you know, go on contraception the minute you start having sex. But like, it's not actually that. And I'm realizing that as older as I get and like hearing people struggling with trying to get pregnant, that.
Yeah.
And even knowing that, yeah, that there's only 6 days that you can get pregnant. It's like, what was all the drama about? Like, if you monitor it.
Yeah, the trick is you have to know the 6 days.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
The problem is, it kind of goes along with this, I work with so much of in my clinic, is hormonal imbalances. So not everyone has a regular 28-day cycle. And this is the problem. If you have 35-day cycle, if you have 23-day cycle, those six days shift all the time.
Okay.
So it's very hard to know. Like for me, actually, it's such a good like lesson last week, or if this my cycle this month, I'm always like bang on. I've never been later than like 3-day cycle. And last month I was like, I don't think I ovulated this month. Now I was up the walls. Like, it was such a good reminder to be like, how much stress affects your period. It's probably the most stressful month of my entire life in January. And I didn't ovulate. I ovulated a week late. Okay. So if I had just gone my normal like 6 days, I'm always fine these 2 days, and then I can have sex afterwards, I would have been pregnant last month. Well, I would have been having sex on my fertile days by accident. Like, so I was like, I'm getting so glad I was overly conscious. Not in the cards right now kind of thing. But it's just a good little reminder. So it's more just really understanding it. So like the biggest thing that I would say to my clients, I'm like, right, let's talk cervical mucus. And like girls, my clients are like, okay, we're really getting in there. Like, looking at your discharge or your mucus is such a good way to know if you're ovulating. So we're talking about the 6 days. Let's say like you're finished your period, and it's kind of the window between finishing your period and up to ovulation. So if you have a regular cycle, say if you're a 28-day cycle, 30-day cycle, it's probably around day like 14 you're going to ovulate. Okay.
Yeah,
just explain to everyone listening, when you ovulate, your egg gets released.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that egg only lives for about 24 hours.
Okay,
right? So where does 6 days come from, because that's only there for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Sperm lives for 5 days. Okay. So technically, if you ovulate in day 14 and you had sex on day 9, that sperm is still floating around, like looking for something to do, looking for an egg to fertilize. And potentially you can get pregnant. Even if you hadn't had sex any of the days in the run up to that, just day 9, you can potentially get pregnant then. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense.
So it's always like ovulation, and you go back, say like 5 or 6 days before, just to make sure that you're covering yourself. But once you know you've definitely ovulated, and I mentioned there cervical mucus, that like your discharge, I always say to people, think of raw egg whites. For a sec. So it's clear, it's quite stringy, it can be sticky, like you can literally stretch it between your fingers. Whereas like discharge before your period is like come like a yogurty, like it's white and it doesn't, it's not like, you know, slippery. Like even having sex before your period would feel a bit different. That's fertile mucus. And if you see that, it means you're gonna ovulate in the next day, like 24 hours. So it's a good little and that's why last month I was like, I didn't see that this month. Like, I was like, I didn't see that fertile mucus. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna just be a bit cautious this, you know, this month.
Yeah.
And God, I did. But that for me was just the sign. I was like, okay, that was weird that I didn't see it. So that's a really simple thing that you can check. Okay. And if you want to go even more in depth, you can use something like natural cycles where you track your cycle. But with the body temperature thing, it is trickier. Like I was saying, if you're like 3 nights a week, like that, your temperature can be changed by if you're hungover.
Yeah.
Or if you're working night shifts or coming home late. So like, I don't think like that. I know for me, anyway, in college, that would have just been a disaster. Like it wouldn't work for me. It's going like 3 nights a week, you know, that way. So, does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And what about like, can you use, or would you recommend using like apps like Clue and that, or?
No.
Okay.
They're great for tracking your period. Like I'm like, every single woman should be knowing when she's getting her period 100%. Yeah. Or no, like when I see clients, I'm like, hey, what were your last four cycles? And people are like, oh, I think it comes around every once a month. But I'm like, once a month can be every 25 days or could be every 33 days. I'm like, you know, so it's really important to track your cycle. But Clue is only a guess. It's only saying, well, basing on our records, you ovulated this month last time, so you're probably going to ovulate this month last time. But it can take into consideration everything that's going on. So for example, if I was using Clue last month, I would be pregnant, because it would have said, oh, you're ovulating today, because I've ovulated every single month, you know, around say the 14th of the month for the last five cycles.
Yeah.
So Clue is only a guess. Mm-hmm. Whereas something like natural cycles, because it's actually taking your body temperature, so you get up every morning, you use it. Sounds like I'm working for natural cycles. I'm not. I'm going on about it. But it's just a basal thermometer. So you take your body temperature every single night, temperature under your thumb, the minute you wake up in the morning, and you log it on your phone.
Okay.
And that will know that you've ovulated. So it's just a little bit different. I think you can kind of use Clue and things like that as like a guide, but like definitely wouldn't be like, okay, we're good to go. Ovulated, like definitely not.
Okay, perfect. So you kind of said earlier that the pill and contraception, there's no research to say that it affects your fertility at all then, long-term use of contraception.
Yeah, what would be important to note there is the pill does deplete important nutrients for fertility though. So like if someone's on the pill, I'm like, you need to come off it and wait minimum 3 months before you try to get pregnant, because your egg quality is based on your nutrients in your diet and in your body. So if the pill is depleting nutrients, your eggs aren't going to be as healthy. Does that make sense? So like your zinc, your magnesium, your B vitamins, they're all really, really important for fertility. So I think from even just having a healthy pregnancy perspective, it's important to give your body a little bit of time before you try and get pregnant, minimum 3 months, I always say, coming off the pill. So for some people, I have seen that actually has made a difference, you know, like if you're low in B vitamins, like B12, for example, like that can impair ovulation. Or if you're low in zinc from being on the pill, it can cause things like higher testosterone levels, which might throw off your ovulation. So it's not like, you know, it's not directly affecting your fertility, but it can because of other factors that it affects, you know.
That's really good to hear, though, because I feel like I know that it's something that I definitely stress about, and generally people are afraid that long term, especially because some people are on the pill from when they're like 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Obviously it's that's kind of another myth then, that they think, oh my God, because, you know, for my age, you know, like a lot, like most of my friends, we're not planning on having kids anytime soon, but like it's coming up soon enough. And now we're thinking, oh my God, all those things that we were doing when we were younger, are they going to affect us when we actually want to have kids? But that's really good to hear.
Yeah. And your egg quality, I think people don't realize this either. Like your eggs take about 3 months to change, to develop. Okay. So like what you do over those 3 months determines your egg quality. It's not what you did when you're 18 that determines your egg quality.
Okay.
So even the other way, even if you were a teenager who ate no fruit and vegetables and you were not drinking every weekend, you were smoking, like, you know, that way.
Yeah.
You're not going to affect that now. It is very much like what you're doing right now. You can change your hormones. Just because you had heavy periods when you're 17 doesn't mean you have heavy periods now at 27. Like it's like your period is literally, I would say, like your month report card. It's what you've done in the last 1 month to 3 months that's reflecting you how you are now.
Okay, amazing. That's so good to hear. I feel like so many people are going to be so relieved.
Yes.
Also, another question is about the morning after pill. So I heard recently, or I saw recently, is it true that the morning after pill doesn't work if you have already ovulated? And then if so, what is the purpose of it? If that makes sense. Like, I hope I'm wording that correctly.
Is it true? From my understanding of the morning after pill, it works by shedding the uterine lining.
Mm-hmm.
So you take it, and then it's a really high dose of hormones. It's basically how when you're on the pill and you stop taking the pill, you get a pill bleed a few days later.
Okay. Yeah.
So the morning after pill causes a similar thing, that if there is a uterine lining there, it will cause it to shed. So if an egg has implanted, got a little nice and cozy, then the uterine lining after being fertilized.
Yeah.
I don't know in terms of if it only works after... As far as I know, because there's supposed to be loads of people pregnant, surely, like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I saw it, yeah. I don't know if I saw it on TikTok or where I saw it, but then I showed it to my friend and the two of us were literally like, what?
And what did Google say?
Well, I Googled it previously and it kind of agreed with that point that if you've already ovulated that it won't work. But then earlier on today when I was catching up on this, it kind of said, I don't know, do I still have it here? No, I think I'm after Xing out.
My understanding was that it would still work, and I kind of feel like if it didn't, that it would only, like, that's 50% of people who it wouldn't work for. Like, that's quite high, I'm confused. I'll look it up afterwards myself as well. But my understanding is it causes the uterine lining to shed, and like the uterine lining is there once you finish your period. So I don't know. Yeah, I must look it up again. But that's it. If that is true, oh my God, like, surely there's more people who are getting pregnant then.
I know. Because, you know? I think the thing that I saw was it was a girl on TikTok who had a baby even after taking the morning after pill. Anyways.
Also, what am I talking about though as well? That actually makes no sense either. Because if you've ovulated, you don't need the morning after pill, in theory. You can't get pregnant.
Right.
This is what we're talking about. The 6 days of your cycle.
Yeah.
If you ovulated on Tuesday, now today's Friday, you go out the weekend and you've unprotected sex, you cannot physically get pregnant. There is nothing there. It's like you having sex with the lamppost. Like, that's how likely you are to get pregnant. No, genuinely, like, that is if you've ovulated. So, I mean, there's no point, like, in theory then, because what's it going to do? Like, how can it work?
Yeah.
Whereas the first half of your cycle, it causes that uterine lining to shed, I presume, so it stops it from getting pregnant. That's very interesting. It's the whole, like, you know, just went through, like, a little circle there of the morning after. But yeah, there's no need. Obviously, people are still getting it in the second half of their cycle because they're absolutely freaked. But technically, you don't need it if you've ovulated, because you can't get pregnant.
Okay, right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's confusing, but that makes sense. And are there negative side effects to taking the morning after pill too often or at all?
Oh my God, I remember this years ago when I was in school, like, hearing, like, you can only take it 3 times in your whole life and then you're infertile. Like, you know, absolute horror. I think it was just Catholic Ireland trying to make us not have sex.
Oh my God, it probably is, like,
As far as I know, no, there is no side effects. I think it can throw off your cycle a little bit for a few weeks. I mean, that's expected. You know, any kind of stress in the body can throw off your cycle. So as far as I know, there's no side effects, no impact on fertility, but... I mean, things are always changing, but that's what I know at this moment in time.
Then I have lots of questions in from people in relation to contraception. One girl said, massive reduction in sex drive after the pill, what would you recommend?
After she came off the pill?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Sex drive is very tricky.
I presume.
Oh, she meant after the pill, like after going on.
After
the pill.
You using the pill, okay, yeah.
There's not much you can do. This is me being so brutally honest. Like, I could be like, oh my God, we have this herbal tonic and blah blah blah, and you can only buy it from my clinic, and it's unbelievable. I use it myself. How many people buy that? Like,
I know.
That's what I think about. Like, sex drive is such a real niche market. Like, people would hook it to my veins.
Yeah,
it's gonna have more sex, but. When you go on the pill, it's such an ironic thing. The pill, again, switches off your hormones, including your libido. Mm. So why would your body want to have sex when you're switching off your hormones? Like, so all you have when you're on the pill is your own body getting you in the mood, like your own mindset. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right,
like,
yeah.
You've no natural hormones increasing your libido, basically. So it's kind of, it's crap. It's just one of the side effects of being on the pill. There's literally not much you can do. That's just... And it's so annoying. Like, and the other thing that's a massive side effect that a lot of people don't realize is it can make it which increases vaginal dryness because
All
estrogen,
right.
that hormone again inside your cycle, that's what makes everything nice and slippery and
Yeah.
increases your cervical mucus for kind of preparing for ovulation. Because obviously your body wants sex to feel really good to make you get pregnant. Like that's it's so smart. So that's also switched off when you're on the pill. So sex actually even, doesn't even feel as good. So like I think that indirectly then can also decrease the libido because you're like, oh, like I'm not mad about it, or like, you know, I can't get wet, like stuff like that. Like I know
Yeah.
girls be freaked about that, and it's actually got to do with the pill as well. You know, so
Okay. And
we weren't
then
told that when we were in the doctor's office, that's for sure.
exactly, yeah. And is there what could she change up her contraception to something like else to help her sex drive? Like which
Yeah.
one would you
I
recommend
mean, again, like
instead?
non-hormonal versions, like the copper coil
Yeah.
or the like natural cycles. The other one is the Mirena coil or the Kallena coil. Those two coils, they're not meant to stop ovulation. So they come into the body and they thin the uterine lining. So they stop, let's say you did get pregnant or sperm did get very far. There's nothing for like the egg to implant on. That's kind of how it works and to kind of
Okay.
get cozy into. But you usually when you get the Mirena coil or the Kallena coil, they're very similar. It's just the Kallena coil has less like kind of more localized hormones. It's like a lower dose. I would say like your body's just a bit freaked at the start and it stops ovulation because it's like, lads, what is in us? Oh my God, like what is going on here? But usually when you've had the Mirena coil in for maybe about like 6 to 12 months, you actually do start ovulating again on it.
Okay.
So potentially that's a better option because you will start making your own hormones again. Again, it still works the contraceptive. So that can be a bonus. There is other side effects that go along with it, though. I find anyone who suffers with mood, I'm like, do not go near the Mirena
Really?
coil. Like, if anyone ever has ever been on the mini pill and felt like that dip in their mood, and I'm sure people are listening, like, oh my God, that was me. I was crazy on the mini pill.
Yeah.
It's the same hormones that are in the Mirena coil, or the implant is the other one. I know girls have just been like, I was literally a psychopath on the implant.
Yeah, so many
So
people say that.
your mood, yeah, can really be affected on, they're called progesterone-only birth controls. So I'm always just like, they're like, proceed with caution kind of thing. Like, it's, here's me like, oh, it's a great option. But also, like, there's always a caveat for everything. Like, do you know that way? It's like,
Okay.
there's, yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay. And next one, can a hormonal imbalance from coming off the pill fix itself over time?
If you've addressed the, oh, hormonal balance from coming off the pill, yes, it can. So I will see again, opening that wardrobe from earlier on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes you come off the pill, that wardrobe opens and kind of all hell breaks loose for a little time, a little while. And normally it's acne that might kind of flare up for a lot of girls.
Okay.
And you kind of have to ride the wave. Like I would see a lot of clients with this, and I do a seminar called Breaking Up with Birth Control, and I literally like help explain this to people and kind of say like, this is what's going to happen, this is supplements that are great to take, or if this does happen, this is what to take. Sorry, I don't make it sound like I'm freaking people out here, but normally these hormones will surge for about 12 to 18 months and then they calm down again. So, like, you kind of have to ride the wave sometimes, but
Okay.
yeah, no, 100%, if you come off the pill and your hormones a little bit overplayed, just stick with it, like, you know what I mean, keep going and give yourself at least 12 months before kind of making any rash decisions. The
Okay.
worst thing I see people do is they get to like the 8 9 month mark and they're sick of their skin, say being bad or flaring up, and they go back on the pill. And I'm like, you're so close. The finish line was just there, you
Yeah.
know? So it's like, just stick with it. Like, you know, really give yourself 12 months and then you'll see improvements kind of start coming. Then the hormones will start to die off then, or die off, start to decrease.
Yeah. Okay, amazing. Another question. In my 40s, off the pill over 6 months and getting very light periods slash spotting, what blood test should I ask for?
40s, she's probably kind of perimenopausal there. So like in perimenopause, your estrogen levels are a little bit, they're all a bit haywire. I would get her to go in and just get a full blood test done, get all of her hormones checked to go in the start of your cycle. So between day 2 to 5, day one of your cycle is always the first day of like your proper bleed. So like if you spot for a few days before, that's the end of your old cycle. That's important as well, because
Okay.
a lot of girls don't realize that. They're like, oh, I get real light bleed for 3 days and then my then heavier bleed comes. And I'm like, make sure you're tracking from that first day of your heavy bleed.
Okay.
So there's for that woman, if she does listen to the podcast, there is a post on my page that I go through. I just explain, actually I have a highlight called blood testing actually, and I put up a list of blood tests to ask for your GP in there.
Okay, fab. The next question, I think we've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but will bad things happen if I come off the pill after years?
Yes and no, it just completely depends on the person. Like,
Yeah.
was she Barbara who went on the pill when she was 17 because she didn't want to get pregnant, or was she Barbara who went on the pill for when she was 17 because she was fainting in school because her periods were so bad? Do you know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
very, very different. It completely depends on the person.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know it's an annoying answer, but it is. We're all so different, and it's just, again, you're very different. Like, some of my clients come to me just for coming off birth control and they're freaked, right? So I'm explaining to them, well, the biggest thing I do, help you understand how your hormones work and then what you need to do to support them, right? And what throws them off. So when I'm going through things that throws them off, so constipation is really bad for hormones, not enough green vegetables. I find cow's milk, massive link with kind of heavier periods and acne and things like that. Not
Yeah.
enough plant-based proteins, right? So not enough chickpeas and lentils and stuff. So we're going through all these things and I'm like, right, let's look at now 17-year-old Ashlyn. Like, how much hummus and falafels were you eating in from your Irish mummy dinners growing up? Where when we having broccoli and you know what I mean? How much glass of milk were you having, yogurts, and like
Yeah.
you're probably constipated. So some of the people are like, oh yeah, I'm actually way healthier than I was when I was a
Of
teenager, when I
course,
went
yeah.
first on the pill. So that's a huge thing as well. Just because you were like that when you were younger doesn't mean it'll be like that now. It's completely lifestyle related. Like, you probably live such a healthier life now in Australia than you
Yeah,
did in Ireland in when you were in
definitely.
fifth year. Do you know that way?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's important to understand that as well.
And so, but like, let's say if you had no major issues going on the pill in the first place, you were just going on it as a form of contraception, then would you say coming off the pill years later would be relatively fine? Yeah.
Yeah, and depends what pill you're on. Like, again, I've mentioned zinc a little bit at the start. Like, zinc really does deplete your, or the pill depletes your zinc levels, and zinc's so important then for things like skin healing, and it's really important for your libido and really important for egg quality. So I think people should make sure they're supplementing with things like zinc, and your B vitamins are quite important. B vitamins are the ones that the pill depletes. But making sure you're kind of supporting your body that when you do come off the pill, you're not deficient. Like, your B vitamins are
Yeah.
very important for your mood, you know, that way. So it's kind of just more covering yourself as well.
Okay. And then is it better to be on the mini pill rather than the regular pill?
They're the exact same, whatever works for you. They're
Okay.
literally the mini pill, like I said earlier, that's the one that's like the Mirena coil. So if your mood is really affected, the mini pill isn't always the best option, from my opinion anyway.
Okay. We've kind of, it's, yeah, this one we've kind of touched on it as well, but she just asks, is there any contraception that isn't bad for you? Hate the pill and condoms. I suppose, what does she mean by is it bad for you? I suppose people are just kind of worried about affecting your hormones, but basically, we kind of touched on maybe she could look into natural cycle, as you said,
The copper coil,
or the copper
possibly for
coil.
her. She hates condoms then as well. Yeah. So I think we say bad for you, they're probably thinking like, you know, switching off your hormones doesn't have any adverse effects on the body. Yeah.
Tips for post-pill breakouts, you kind of touched on that already. Then hair loss and hormonal contraception.
This is an interesting one. So I actually see this quite commonly as well with things like the Mirena coil, the mini pill, the bar, those progesterone-only contraceptives. When you look at the structure of these progesterones, they act more like testosterone in the body than they do progesterone. So I mentioned at the start, people feel more anxious. Progesterone, our own hormone, is very calming. It's really good for anxiety, really good for mood, really good for skin. Whereas progesterone, it's very different. It's nothing got to do with our own hormone. It's really important people realize that. The other one on from birth control acts more like testosterone. So what can happen sometimes is, I'm sure people listening are like, oh my God, that happened to me. When you go on the mini pill, your skin gets oilier, or like you find that you're getting a bit more facial hair, or like your body hair, or your hair might fall out as well. And that can be due to the mini pill. So yeah, and then often then when you come off the pill, then your skin breaking out, what that actually is, it's testosterone surge. And again, testosterone cause increased hair, and it can cause oilier skin, and it can cause hair loss. So some people don't get any acne, but they're like, oh my God, my hair is falling out post-pill, and it's the same hormone at play there. That
Okay.
makes sense.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
Then OCP progesterone to prevent pregnancy, but now to prevent miscarriage. How? If that does that make sense to you? Because that doesn't
OCP
make much.
progesterone to prevent pregnancy.
Yeah, but now to
I think she's
prevent.
confused. Okay, so I think that's the question there, and that's literally just what I explained there about your own hormone, progesterone, and progesterone. It
Okay.
drives me around the bend because the mini pill is called, the doctors say, oh, it's progesterone only birth control, and I'm like, it's not progesterone, it's progestin.
Okay.
It's completely different. It's GESTIN. It's the
Yeah.
end, where our own hormone is G-E-S-T-E-R-O-N-E. It's a completely different spelling, but everyone calls it progesterone.
Okay.
So she might have been on the mini pill, which she thought was a progesterone only pill, right? Stopping her getting pregnant as a birth control.
Yeah.
And then when you're getting pregnant, so the most important hormone for pregnancy is progesterone. Progesterone maintains pregnancy. It holds everything in our cycle, like our normal period cycle. When you run out of progesterone, you get your period. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So like, think about that. Like I would say, imagine your progesterone, like two hands holding in your period. And like, as if when you run out, you let go and you get your period. So it's very, very important. A lot of miscarriages are due to progesterone deficiency. So you can actually take synthetic or like hormonal progesterone, actually, like, you know, almost identical to our own hormone for pregnancy. I think she's just confused there in the wording rather than actually the hormone.
Okay, well, that's good for people to know then.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on from contraception, we'll go on to a little bit about fertility. So I think lots of people, as we touched on a few things already, but like, I always worry about whether I'm actually going to be able to have kids in the future, just for a mix of different reasons, because I've had a very light period all my life. Just contraception used to bother me, but now it doesn't anymore because you've just cleared that one up for me. And just the general fact that it's not actually as easy to have kids for some people as it's made out to be when you're younger. But is there any way to find that out before I reach the stage of actually wanting kids, like how fertile you actually are?
There's kind of two ways to think about this. In one sense, it's like knowledge is power, and like, you know, you can go and get like, yeah, I think it's called an AMH level done. The AMH has got to do with your ovarian reserve, like how many eggs you've left, basically, right?
Right.
But it only takes one egg. So I've had girls come into me, they're 25, they got this free AMH test done in work, like, and they've been told you instead of having, say, 1,000 eggs left, you only have 500 eggs left, and they're freaked and they're told you need to freeze your eggs, you need to, you know, consider this and this. And I think part of it is like a kind of a business, like these same companies doing the test, they go, oh, we also offer egg freezing. It's in their best interest, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's just my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be very different if that 25-year-old was having irregular periods and she's only having two periods a year. But like, you know, like I said there, it only takes one egg. So mm-hmm. if you have healthy periods, like that's the best way to know your fertility, I think, anyway. Like, you know, even PMS, people don't realize, but PMS is a hormonal imbalance, and it's lack of progesterone most of the time that causes PMS. And PMS, people are saying, like premenstrual tension or premenstrual syndrome, it's a huge range of things. So like anything from headaches for your period, sore boobs, cramps, breakouts, low mood, anxiety, insomnia, constipation, like water retention and swelling. Like you might get no breakouts, but you might get really bad migraines, and your friend might get really bad. Do you know what I mean? It's all different.
Yeah.
But no matter what you get, it's always lack of progesterone that causes that problem.
Okay.
Right? Now, I've just mentioned there a second ago, progesterone is the most important hormone for pregnancy.
Okay.
So imagine, I see it all the time. Girls come into me, they've had really, really painful periods their entire life, and now they can't get pregnant. And I'm like, you've always had a progesterone issue, and now it's just translating over into pregnancy.
Yeah.
So I think, first of all, having really healthy periods, knowing you're ovulating, looking for that cervical mucus. For you, kind of saying like lighter periods as well, like you may need to look into that. Your periods actually might be too light,
mm-hmm.
you know, because think about your period is literally like that real soft, cushiony kind of thing that an egg will implant into.
Yeah.
So light periods are also, you know, just as kind of, we need to look into them just as much as a heavy period. Like, you know, you want a nice healthy flow kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then like that, if someone really wants to say, like, I think, you know, okay, what is my ovarian reserve? Like, what are my hormones? Like, you could go get that checked. But I think it is a little bit of a slippery slope if you don't really have issues. Then some people are like, yeah, like knowledge is power. Like, I'd rather know. And I think it depends on the person.
Okay.
But I think having a healthy, regular period is the most important thing that you can do.
Okay. That's good to know. But I remember I went to the doctor years ago because it was my mom that pointed out to me ages ago, because I was just telling her that like my periods, I could literally have, like, I've never had an issue with heavy flows. Like, I know my friends would literally be talking about these heavy flows, and I'm like, I'm so happy that I've never experienced that. Mm-hmm. But then I said it to mom, she was like, I think you should go to the doctor about that because it might affect you when it comes to fertility. But when I went to the doctor, she didn't seem to be bothered. She seemed to think it was normal, but I suppose,
But what would be your normal period? Like, how often would it last? How many days?
I'd say around 4 days, maybe 5 days sometimes. But like, even when I'm finishing it, like, it's like, you know, like a teaspoon kind of amount of period, really. Mm-hmm. Like very
late. And what about the first 2 days? Like, how much blood would you have there?
The first 2 days, like, I could literally, to give you an example, I could survive on using one tampon for the whole day, for the 2 days that it's at its heaviest. So that's just to give an example.
Light enough. I mean, it might be just your genetic makeup. It could just be that's how you are as well.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, what we're saying there is you might have a little bit lower estrogen levels. Okay. Now you have enough estrogen because estrogen is needed to ovulate. So it's not as if you're completely deficient and it's, you know, really, really low.
Yeah.
But other things that deplete estrogen, things like stress might make that lower body weight, like over exercising, any kind of stress in the body can deplete your estrogen levels. And then lack of kind of nourishment in your diet. So like those plant-based proteins mentioned earlier, like your chickpeas, your lentils, they're really important. Your iron-rich foods, do you actually have enough iron in your diet to make your period grow? That's what it is. It's blood.
Okay.
So it's kind of looking at all those factors. So like if I was in your position, I'd just go get things like make sure your iron levels are optimal, like your B12 is optimal. You can check your estrogen levels in the start of your cycle. And if everything looks fine, you're like, that's actually just me. Like some people, it is just genes.
We're
all so different that like it might not be anything to know that way. So yeah. Okay. You get that done, check. Yeah.
Grant. What are the main reasons for people struggling with fertility? And then are there any things that we can do to help that? Like, what can we do to make sure that we're not struggling when we do try and have kids?
God, there's so many different factors that would affect fertility. The kind of main ones that come to my mind, though, number one is the low progesterone. So you actually are getting pregnant, but you don't have enough progesterone to maintain that pregnancy, to hold everything in. So your, you know, early miscarriages can often be due to that.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing to understand about progesterone, even in our own period, is stress steals progesterone. So it's usually stress that's the major factor there. And even like our generation's fashion, like we love HIIT workouts. We love, like, you know, we're busy. Like even you were like, oh my God, I was so busy last 2 weeks. Like even though it's good stress, it's like we do run on adrenaline a lot of the time. Yeah. And if your body thinks it's being chased by a bear 24/7, like that would affect fertility, like, you know, this kind of thing. So that's important to understand. The other thing then that I think impacts fertility is people not ovulating. That there's many different reasons why, you know, either your ovulation window is missed, so people are having sex at the wrong time, like, like I said, 6 days. If I was trying to get pregnant last month, imagine I tried for those 6 days and I was like, oh, didn't happen this month, I just ovulated late. Imagine I wasn't aware of my cycle, you know, that way. And like a lot of people aren't. I said to them, do you know when you're ovulating? No, I don't know. And they've been trying to get pregnant for a year. Like, I just find it absolutely mad. People don't know.
Yeah.
Or like if you're having sex for your period, it's just, there's no hope. It's physically impossible. So it's really important people know they're tracking their cycle.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be doing, you know, peeing on a stick, doing an ovulation test. It kind of takes away some of this, I think, the fun of it a little bit. But like, you know, if you generally know this is my cycle. So understanding when you're ovulating or making sure you are ovulating, like, again, get bloods done to make sure you're ovulating, you know, check for other issues. And then the other one that's often missed, especially in Ireland, is thyroid issues and fertility are massively linked together.
Okay. So
thyroid can either knock off your period. It can also deplete progesterone in, you know what I mean?
Okay. So from
a miscarriage perspective. Mm-hmm. And underactive thyroid is a huge kind of thing linked with early miscarriage as well. The problem in Ireland is the range for thyroid, what a doctor sees as normal and what we would see as normal from a fertility perspective, are two very, very different things.
Okay.
And I kind of find that something that it's very new research. So, and it's not me, like, I don't want to come across arrogant at all, but like if a doctor trained, you know, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, and they haven't constantly been updated, like a GP who might be great at everything else, but they learned, you know, 30 years ago, this is the levels for hormones. That's not right anymore. And it often gets missed. People come back to me and I look at their bloods and I'm like, your thyroid's way off from fertility perspective. So it's really, really, really important to make sure.
Okay.
So those are probably three major things I would see.
Yeah, that last one's very interesting. And also as well, it's funny that you said about the stress thing, because I noticed over COVID when everyone was at home and in lockdown, there was a lot of people getting pregnant when they had been trying for so long and they couldn't. Like even Rosanna Davison, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean,
amazing.
You can't prove that or anything, but she did think or seem to think that it's because like it was the first time in ages that they had just been chilled, relaxed, not thinking about it. And then it happened, like, it was, which is so amazing, like, so, so amazing.
Yeah.
Another question that somebody actually sent in was, can women who are trying to conceive take CBD oil?
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah.
I can't see any contraindication there. but I'm not 100%. I say look it up and see. I don't really use CBD oil in my clinic, so it's not something I would use on a regular basis to know the precautions around it. But I think it should be fine. We'll just double check and see.
What should people steer clear of in the run up to trying to conceive? Is there anything that they should avoid?
Stress. So a huge part of fertility, what we would do, so first of all, balance hormones through diet and through things like that. And then we look at your toxic load as well. So your environment is very, very important, because like what you come in contact with, your fetus will come in contact with as well. And I would say like it takes 12 months to make a baby. So it's 3 months before you get pregnant in terms of your eggs being super healthy. And then the 9 months of being pregnant. So sometimes I'd say to people, like, act as if you're pregnant when you're trying to get pregnant. So like, you know, when you're pregnant, you're not going out on a Saturday night and staying until 5 o'clock in the morning drinking, like, or even doing workouts. Like, you know, you might love going for 5-10K runs in a week and this kind of thing. Like, you wouldn't do that if you're pregnant either. So that's a really good analogy. And like, you probably try and eat like healthier food, and like, or if someone smokes, it might trick you up smoking when they're pregnant. So I would say act as if you're already pregnant in terms of your environment and toxic load. So there's chemicals in things like, for example, plastic is a major one. So, you know, ditch like the reusable plastic bottles all the time, and get like, get like a reusable stainless steel bottle, or switching to like eco-friendly kitchen sprays, and like, you know, chemicals from things like that, like dishwashing tablets, and, you know, washing up liquid and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just trying to minimize how much chemicals were coming in to our system. Deodorant, fake tan is a massive one. If you're a tan person, wearing perfume all the time, like, as women, especially in Ireland, like, Irish girls love their glam, like, you know, that way. So you imagine up in the morning, by the time you've like put your products on, done your makeup, put your perfume on, like walking out the door going to work, like, how many things have you put on your skin, let alone like you walking by and like the bus gone by with petrol fumes. And so we, our toxic load, we have a lot of that in our system. So I say to clients, like, start minimizing it where you can, like switch to natural products, and, you know, like that, get rid of plastic in your house. Like, instead of buying tin tomatoes, get them from like the carton instead, you know. Like tins are aluminium, like that's a chemical in itself. So it's just it's a really good book. If someone is literally like, I really want to get pregnant, like I want to do everything I possibly can do, there's a good book called It Starts With the Egg. Now, it's a little bit technical, like, it is, I would say take it with a pinch of salt, because it's very much aimed at people who might have been going maybe for IVF and stuff, who really want to know the nitty gritty. But the baseline information in it is very, very good. Like, they give really practical tips, like, you know, use this instead of this, and did you know this, this, and this, and supplements and that kind of stuff. So yeah, It Starts With the Egg is a good book for anyone who is on that fertility journey and kind of wants to learn a little bit more.
Okay. And so switching over from fertility now to menopause, is there anything that can be done to reduce like the early effects of menopause?
Yes, so again, menopause is very much a translation of your periods. Again, if you've had horrific periods, chances you're going to have horrific menopause. Like, you know, the way it's, that's the way it works. Yeah. Hormonal imbalance in itself. The difference is most women our age have too much estrogen in their system, like the heavy periods, the sore boobs, you know, that kind of stuff. It's too much of estrogen. Whereas in the menopause, our estrogen starts to drop a little bit. So estrogen, again, it's that, it's not all bad. Like, I can say, yes, it makes your boobs heavy, your periods heavy and stuff, but estrogen is your kind of your zest for life, your get up and go, your libido, your sex drive, your, you know, vaginal preventing dryness, that kind of stuff. So these kind of symptoms creep in with women when they go to the menopause. So, you know, managing stress, keeping a really good diet, herbal medicine is unbelievable for menopause and for hormones. Like, me training at the moment to be a herbalist, like, my brain is real science-based, so I love knowing how things work. But herbal medicine, now me understanding, like, there's things called phytochemicals in herbs, and they're literally like the chemical constituents that react with our DNA, like our cells and our body. Like, it's me learning the science. So I should say, people don't realize, my mum is actually a herbalist. So I was brought up with natural medicine, like, when we were kids, like, that's what I've always used. And a big part of that is I trained in like Chinese medicine and Ayurveda medicine as part of my training a few years ago as well. So, like, you know, I love science, but I love like old medicine as well. But anyway, understanding now how herbs work, there are certain herbs that help, like, they act like estrogen in the body for menopause. So they help increase your, like, decrease your symptoms, like hot flushes and vaginal dryness and low mood. And like, there's herbs that can do that. So
amazing.
The only thing I'll say, me learning that now, I'm like, they're 100% there for us to use. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, there's a herb for any complaint that someone would have,
yeah,
there's something that we can give in nature for it. So it's fascinating. So a huge part of our clinic is herbal medicine as well. So we've got hundreds of women come to us and we make up tonics for menopause.
Oh, amazing. I'm dreading it. Absolutely dreading it.
even ages ago, yeah, I don't even yeah.
yeah. Lots of people have actually asked what your opinion is on hormone replacement therapy. And in particular, like in terms of there seems to be fear mongering in relation to it possibly causing breast cancer and clot.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, if you have family history of breast cancer and things like that, they're not going to recommend that you take HRT the same. Like even if you have history of breast cancer, aneurysms or high blood pressure, usually you're not even meant to be on the combined pill, you know, that way. So that family of things kind of stay together.
Mm-hmm.
HRT, again, it's an amazing development in science. It helps so many women. It kind of doesn't often get the full picture. Like, yeah, HRT can be great for a lot of women, but when we do it from a natural perspective, it's mm-hmm. like we're supporting hormones naturally, and it's not just localized, it's just for this, you know, we look at the whole body. So I'm not against it at all. Like, you know, it's again, once your GP kind of helps you, it understands the risks with that, and that's usually family risks, you're usually okay with it.
Right.
From a side effects perspective, like.
Mm-hmm. But obviously you would be leaning towards more natural remedies, which is, you kind of touched on this already in terms of beauty products and how they affect us, which I think is really interesting. And I listened to you talk about this on a different podcast before, and I actually ended up buying different deodorants, different toothpaste, all these other things. What types of beauty products, as you kind of mentioned it earlier, but what other beauty products affect your hormones the most, and how exactly do they affect your hormones, not just in relation to fertility, like do they affect your moods and different things?
Mm-hmm. So these chemicals are called xenoestrogens. So these xenoestrogens come into the body and our body's like, what the hell are they? I don't know what we do with those. And I go, you know, we'll just convert them into estrogen. But it's not the estrogen, again, that makes you happy and horny. It's the estrogen that makes your boobs sore and your periods heavy. So they're estrogen mimickers. So they can cause a lot of hormonal imbalance with that, like you have too much estrogen. And when you have too much estrogen, it knocks off our beloved progesterone there in the second half of your cycle anyway. So, you know, progesterone and estrogen are meant to be balanced with each other. And again, progesterone is that real calming hormone, really good for preventing acne, your menstrual migraines, makes your period lighter. So imagine your poor progesterone. First of all, you're up the walls and you're so stressed and your progesterone is being depleted. Same time, you have all these chemicals went to your body. Like, how can progesterone even compete with that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the main thing. Yeah, it disrupts your estrogen levels in your system.
Okay.
Yeah.
So these are the likes of fake tan. I know you said it before about like even your nail varnish, different things like using bleach as like a cleaning product and stuff like that. Like all these different things, which honestly made me kind of scared. I was like, oh my God, all these things I just use every day, I need to replace them with all these other things. Yeah. But I suppose it is an easy fix as well at the same time. Like when I went to do my shopping, I was just like, sure, I'll just buy this instead of that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the one thing over here, I found fake tan. I need to find use 10 organic, but I need to find an organic 10 over here. I haven't gone that step far yet.
It's actually a really good brand because they sent it to me. It's called, oh my God, it's going to drive me mad. Eco by Sonia. Have you heard of those?
No, never. Eco by
Sonia. They sent them to me from here, and the mountain girls, I have loads of people following me from Australia, and they're like, oh my God, that's the best tan ever. I love it. That's Australian.
No way. Okay.
Yeah, it's called Eco by Sonia, and they have everything. Their brand is unbelievable. It's a bit expensive, but like I have the body wash, they have like a lovely like scrub, they have like facial oils, they have tans, else I love in that?
I'm gonna write
shower gel. Everything is natural. So like the thing behind it, I think the girl was like a chemist or like a pharmacist, and her sister got cancer, and she was like, there was nothing, everything in the market. The problem is, right, that the chemical stuff, the reason it's good is because there's chemicals in it. Like I've probably small fortune trying to find good natural deodorant. And the reason they're all like crap is because it's missing the aluminium. It's missing the chemicals to stop you sweating. So it's like, you know, so this woman then she created Eco by Sonia, and the range is absolutely gorgeous. It's really, really nice. So have a look for that.
Okay.
The words you're looking for though, so like when we're looking at the chemicals, it's the smell of things that is often
Yeah.
So like if you get like even see a fragrance-free body wash, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it is completely overwhelming. Imagine me learning this in college years ago. Like, I used to come from college and be like, we're all doomed. I'm kind of taking it. Like, wait, I'm trying. Like, do you know, and it took me so long. I love my glam. I love my tan. I love my products. You saw my house. Like, I literally have a room of beauty stuff. Like, generally. Yeah. So it's like, it took me a very long time to kind of come around to that. But what I kind of started doing is, when I say to clients is, start with things that are on your skin. Like, you know, fair enough, shampoos, conditioners are great to kind of go more eco, but like, they're on your head for what, 30 seconds? Like, if you were wearing fake tan all the time, if you've deodorant every single day, like, that's a good place to start. If you're moisturizing every single morning with a certain moisturizer, if you love lighting your candle in the evenings, like, you know, candles have chemicals in them as well. So what you're looking for is things like natural, like soy wax candles are quite popular at the moment. It just means when you're chilling on a Friday night, or even like, I would light a candle, you know, most evenings, like when you come in, and you know, you're not breathing in those chemicals. Mm-hmm. And perfume, do you have to wear perfume every single day? Like, this kind of thing. So it's just kind of minimizing your toxic load. And then the next most important step is making sure detoxification pathways are working efficiently. You know, we're constantly detoxing. Otherwise, we would all be dead years ago. We would never would have made it this far. So it's not as if you're like, oh my God, I'm having all these things. My bodies are going to build up my system. That's the next step. People's gut health isn't great. Like, bleach affects gut health. Like, that's one of the reasons there. Like, those things aren't amazing. Okay. If someone suffers from a constipation, like, your body literally poos out hormones. So you may need to just gut health before even looking at, like, you know, switching to your natural deodorant might not do anything if you're pooing twice a week. Do you get me?
Yeah.
And then your leafy greens, so like your things like cabbage and Brussels sprouts and kale and a cauliflower, like these leafy green vegetables are so important, I always say, for like collecting those bad hormones. They drive down to the gut and you basically poo them out. So there's a lot of factors at play, but like, minimizing toxic load just gives less stress than on that detoxification pathways, basically.
Yeah. No, it's so interesting, and I've tried to adapt it as much as I can, but I'm still obviously there's so many products that I use, do you know what I mean, like every day.
But that's,
like,
the thing, it's just like baby steps, like, everything I use be natural, like your makeup and everything. Like, I'm using all Charlotte Tilbury, like, that's not natural. And people ask me, like, what do you use on my Charlotte Tilbury, like, the best makeup, like, that I'm not going to use some like makeup made from like talc just because it's guff. Like, I'm like, I'll take my risk and I'll have my green smoothie that day. It's just understanding, like, and I would take herbs for liver support, and I'm really trying to, it's literally like a seesaw, right? I'm gonna have all these toxins this side, I need to just make sure I'm balanced, and on the other side,
exactly. Yeah, it's all about balance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so I have a few more, just these are just random questions that came in from people. I just found out I'm pregnant, what's the most important thing early on? You've kind of already touched on this already, just like, I would suppose you're going to say diet and stress.
Congratulations. Folic acid is quite important as well, so good quality pre-pregnancy multivitamins, and I think omega-3 and vitamin D, they're the kind of supplements I recommend for pregnancy.
Okay. PMDD, so premenstrual dysphoric disorder, why is more not known about this condition that affects 1 in 20 women?
Because it's a woman's condition and women are completely overlooked. Is that a good answer? It is absolutely disgraceful. No, honestly.
It's so true, though.
It drives me around the bend. So PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, it's not so much linked in with hormonal imbalance in the same category as like heavy periods would be. It would be more in there with things like depression, bipolar, anxiety. It's like a mental health issue, right? And I've mentioned so many times, progesterone is our real natural calming, really good for anxiety, really good for mood hormone. But when with PMDD, it's like as if they can't use progesterone properly, it makes them feel more anxious, makes them feel really down instead of helping them feel calm. Okay. So I would almost say it's almost like a split personality. I've seen a lot of women with this. They feel absolutely amazing, they get their period, run up to ovulation, feeling great, then ovulation hits, and after that then it's their progesterone phase, okay, the second half of your cycle, and they are like a different person. They can't get out of bed, they're depressed for the whole month, like, you know, fighting with your partner. But it's really extreme. I think some people think like PMS is PMDD. It's there's a fine line between the two, because PMDD is, you are literally, you could be clinically depressed, like that kind of feeling.
Okay,
so
yeah,
the treatment medically for PMDD is antidepressants. That's normally what you give. But it's so hard for women because half the month they feel great. You know, that way it's like they're on antidepressants for the whole month, even though they actually feel fine the rest of the month.
Yeah.
So it can be very tricky, and it's so frustrating. Like, I've sent girls back to the doctor, and the doctor sends back, "What's PMDD?" I've never heard of this before. What's PMDD?
No way.
Like, and I'm like, look it up. Like,
look it up. You're the doctor.
Exactly. Yeah, the doctor rings in. My doctor said he'd never heard of that. He's not doing bloods. And I'm like, who is this doctor? Like, you know, I think that's malpractice. Like, you know, if you don't know something, go and look it up and see.
So, educate yourself further, like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So again, we find it depends on the woman. Some people find like birth control can help it sometimes, but again, that might just be a bit more flat. Like, it's kind of a, you know, double-edged sword. Yeah. That kind of thing. Herbal medicine, unbelievable for PMDD. It's a herb called St. John's Wort, and it helps increase your happy hormones, your serotonin. So we use that quite a lot with our PMDD clients, and vitamin B6 is quite important as well. So it's a lot of nutritional intervention you can do for that. But it is very, very overlooked, I would find anyway.
That is crazy. Like, 1 in 20 women is massive. Like, but as you said, yeah, typical. What brings down prolactin levels?
Yeah, so prolactin, usually stress increases it. Coming off birth control can increase it. What brings it down? Mm-hmm. How long do you have? I would see a lot of women with hyperlactin levels.
And
we use a combination of looking at nutrition. So I said stress increases there. Like, if you're in calorie deficit all the time, always trying to lose weight, that can actually increase your prolactin. Yeah. So it's kind of like with hyperlactin, it's figuring out what's causing the problem. And then we use supplements, nutrition interventions, herbal medicine to help bring that down. But there is specific herbs as well that help bring it down. Like, sage is one that brings it down. And it just depends on the person.
Okay. What does, sorry, I'm just trying to read this, inositol do for polycystic ovary syndrome, and how soon should you get your period back when on it?
So this inositol is a natural supplement. It's actually like a B vitamin that helps regulate like your blood sugars. And this is a massive thing with people with PCOS, with polycystic ovarian syndrome. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is they have too much testosterone. But it's like, okay, why is your testosterone high? How come Barbara, who's 17, testosterone's fine, you know? And it's normally due to a thing called insulin resistance. It's got to do with like sugar and carbs, things like that in your body, how much you're eating. And the inositol powder just helps control that, right?
Okay.
Her question on you know, when to your periods come back, that is completely individual based. You taking an inositol powder and not addressing anything else is not going to do very much. Like, you know, I give my clients an inositol powder along with, you know, regulating blood sugars. If you're having like just cornflakes to breakfast every morning, like that's just a high carb, no protein breakfast to start the day, your blood sugar is going to be all over the place. You're having like just toast or something like that in the mornings. Like, so you have to regulate blood sugars and then use inositol with that. It's not going to work on its own. That's like the same with everything. People take supplements thinking it's going to be magic and not changing anything like lifestyle related. Like, you know, most issues aren't because you're deficient in inositol. Most issues are from diet, lifestyle, stress, and then these supplements help balance that in the system.
Okay. Since I've been double dosing on omegas, my period has gotten better. Is this safe?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Omega-3 is absolutely amazing. So it's anti-inflammatory. And like, that's a big, big thing in the run-up to your period. It's inflammation. It's pain. It's swelling. It's like your body, I would say, is like it's on fire. Progesterone's a natural kind of anti-inflammatory there as well. Puts out that fire. But if you don't have enough progesterone, we need to come at it from a different angle. And omega-3 is great. Yeah, it's absolutely safe to take.
Okay, perfect. This another girl says, I know there's supplements for acne, but is there any for scarring?
The most amazing thing for scarring is microneedling. I've got microneedling done in like a week, so go into a salon and ask. She's Irish, and like local, like to me. I got it done in Conceely in the Skin Boutique in Dublin. But the way it works with scarring, like supplements can fix scarring.
Microneedling,
it causes mild trauma to the skin. And then your skin repairs. Like, imagine you got a cut in your hand. That's fixed then. So that's kind of what microneedling does. It's unbelievable. I've gotten a probably like maybe 8 sessions of it, and I definitely noticed a difference over the years. It's slow. I always say like give your body time. It takes at least 6 months to notice a change. But that's about the best thing. It's definitely microneedling.
Okay, fab. Yeah, because I've actually been looking into that myself as well. Because scars are so annoying. Like everything, you could be putting bio oil on and everything, but it's just nothing's gonna work. Is it normal to have periods 40 to 50 days apart? My doctor told me it's fine.
It's not fine. That is a hormonal imbalance, 100%. Like, there's a reason why it's happening, you know, that way, that it's like doctors kind of think if you have, I think they say 3 periods a year, it's fine because the uterine lining is shedding. Like, you just don't want that uterine lining being too thick, right? Okay. So that's their, you know, thing. So, once you have 3 periods, that's fine. But for her, how come her periods are too long? Like, yeah. go have a little look at my blood testing and get your bloods checked. There has to be a reason why. People come back to me and said, oh, my doctor, everything is fine. Like, either they've no period or their cycles are too long. And I'm like, if you've been told that, they either aren't aware of the optimal range for hormones or the wrong things were checked. There's no way that your periods are normal if they're irregular, because they're like your ovulation having a period is a basic sign of health and wellness. Like, we're designed to have it every 30 days ish, you know, that way. So if it's been pushed off, there has to be a reason why.
Okay. Missed period when usually so regular, not pregnant but still have pains and bloating, help?
Missed period when usually so regular, I mean, this time due to like COVID and all the vaccines, periods have a little more haywire, so it could be from that, obviously, in other circumstances. Stress, like I said to you last month, my period was a week late last month, so it depends. She might be like, oh my god, I missed my period, and then she could still be having the symptoms of PMS. It's just her cycle's a little bit delayed, you know, that way. So it just depends on, and then if it's ongoing, I can say if you haven't got a period in kind of 3 to 6 months, you can go and get bloods done and see what's going on.
Okay, perfect. And the difference between folate and folic acid, and is one better over the other?
Yes. So as nutritionists, naturopaths, we would always recommend folate instead of folic acid. Folate is a natural form of, like, it's a natural form of folic acid, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's more absorbable in the body than folic acid is. And the reason why this is such an issue is certain people, it's like a genetic mutation, and it's quite common in Ireland, actually. And certain people can't absorb folic acid the same way. So you're taking folic acid and your levels can still be low. B12 is kind of in there as well with that. Okay. So folate just means you're taking it and it's highly absorbable, and you don't have to worry about it, basically. It's just a better source.
Okay, perfect.
So yeah.
Another question. What can I do for spots around my lips, sometimes under the skin?
It depends when she's getting them, that's what I would say. Very big. First question I ask clients. Yeah. You know, if you're having acne the entire month, that's red, sore under the skin, chances are that's too much testosterone in the body, or it could be due to gut bacteria, like a bacterial infection, that we address gut health for that. If it's kind of more breakouts around her periods, well, then that's an imbalance of estrogen and progesterone levels. So kind of things we mentioned already, like manage stress, look at estrogen from diet and your toxins and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. And then another woman asks, this is the last two questions. Are any of the supplements in the bridal box unsuitable for prolonged use?
Bridal box, no, they'd all be good. Yeah, they're all absolutely fine. The bridal box is a nutrition box I made for brides.
I was just going to ask, what is this?
My God, that was 2018 when I did that as well. So it's just supplements, like a 12-week supplement plan, basically, in to your wedding.
Oh, fab.
So yeah, no, they're all safe to stay on if you want to.
Okay. And then the last question is it just Terranova folate supplement that's okay to take pre-conception, or would you recommend a prenatal vitamin?
The one that I recommend people to take is, it's on my website, like, you can get it in any shop in Ireland, it's not like it's just for my clinic, it's a brand called NHP, so it's a natural health practice. And it's called Advanced Fertility for Women, and one for men as well. They actually have to work as well. People don't realize women are literally, like, you know, not like putting deodorant on them and like walking around with, you know, glass bottles and like prison lads are out every weekend. Like, is that a joke? Do you know what I mean? So it is really 50, it's literally 50-50. So there's a really good men's version as well. I prefer giving a general multivitamin rather than giving just folic acid or folate on its own. So that brand NHP is really, really nice. It's really good brand. Or anyone that just pop into a health shop and ask for a good quality pregnancy multivitamin, basically.
Okay, perfect. That is all my questions. I feel like I literally bombarded you with questions there on the end, and they were so varied. Thank you so, so much for coming on and answering all those questions, because I've literally taken so much of your time. And it was
cool. I'm so glad.
It was really, really interesting. And I feel like I've come out of it so much more informed, like, than beforehand. And I hope everybody else feels the same.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me on. I think it's always good, like, them kind of quick Q&As are good, because people are all thinking the same thing, so it's good to kind of go through them and hopefully give some people information.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's just mad. Honestly, it's mad. Like, even my me and my friends were talking about all these things and we're like, we haven't a clue. Like, we have not a clue.
Know.
And then even as you're saying, like, when you go to the doctor about these things, you're not even getting correct information because, you know, like the girl that said there that her doctor said it's fine when it's not. Like, do you know what I mean? I feel like you're so interested in you specialize in women's hormones that it's like so amazing to actually get your kind of advice that you don't get from your local GP.
And it's just a perspective, like the doctors, I think it's just the way Ireland is. It's just so Australia is way better. Australia is way better than Ireland is in terms of like natural medicine, and it's just hopefully things will change over the next couple of years.
That is it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got as much information as I did from it. And as I said, please follow Aisling on AOK Nutrition to get way more information. And also follow me on Instagram at Aisling Dowling just to get updates on the podcast and loads of other random bits as well, style, fashion, travel, food, and loads of random bits like that. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye.